For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
I'm very pleased to have Joanne here to give the talk tonight. Joanne is our Wednesday morning Doan and also is a women's health professional in a variety of contexts, and is going to talk about that and how that relates to her practice. So thank you very much, Joanne.
It was an interesting process preparing for this talk because the nature of it is a little different. While I do a lot of talks as part of my job, I found myself going through kind of a sorting and sifting process and really looking at my life with a magnifying glass, kind of thinking, okay, which pieces and which parts have really made a lasting impression on me or been pivotal in some way or have actually changed my life in some significant way. Well, the obvious, obviously, is when I was born myself. Being born in 1951, my mother most likely was completely anesthetized, so more than likely she had no idea what was going on, although she claims that I was easy, that I was an easy birth. So I like to hold on to that thought myself. My sister, however, was breech, so she was not an easy birth at all before, so she kind of paved the way for me. That was a good thing. I grew up on a farm. I lived basically on the farm as a farm girl, romping in nature happily until I was 15 years old. And when I was 15, a couple of things happened. One, I got my first period, and two, my parents decided they were going to get a divorce. And so I, of course, that just blew my world apart. Not long after that, my mother and my stepfather decided to move to California, and this was the 60s, okay? So I went from being a farm girl to California in the 60s, and it was really just a mind opener for me. All kinds of possibilities came to view. And I very quickly left home and went to live in the Bay Area, if you can imagine, 17 years old. So, quit high school, although I did get my teaching degree. I did quit high school. I can't imagine my parents putting up with that, but if my son ever did that, I would kill him. Although he knew about it. I think we did have that conversation briefly once. I taught school, actually, for 15 years. And I had two children born at home. And one of the most important experiences of my life, of course, giving birth. And in fact, I neglected to mention that the name of the talk is The Power of Beliefs. And so I had a daughter first, who actually did not survive the birth. And it was very difficult, probably the most difficult thing I've ever faced in my life. And yet it was also an incredible learning experience. I also had a son who is now 30, and I have a grandson, which is wonderful. I started experimenting with alternative medicine due to the fact that I had some kind of chronic condition which nobody in Western medicine could identify, recognize, believed, or otherwise could help with. And then I became owner of several businesses. My first meditation class actually was in 1994. Learned meditation from an East Indian medical doctor, and I pretty much stuck with it mostly for the most part. I'm sure there were some periods when I wandered, but Found it incredibly helpful, useful, interesting, curious. Developed a sitting practice, basically, it seemed like, from that day forward. And then I was raised as a Christian, and was still practicing Christian quite significantly, I guess you would say. I was actively involved in the Christian church. So during that time also, I discovered women's spirituality, which was another kind of mind-expanding experience for me. When I went through college, I never knew what women's studies was. It didn't exist, I don't think. So when I discovered it, I started doing some workshops and being involved in some groups. And one day I woke up and said, Christianity is just too patriarchal for me. It was just a one-day deal. I was like, I'm out of here. So it was, I'll never forget it. It was just so odd. I kept my practice going. I'm a voracious reader, so I came across the book Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow by Marcia Sinatar. I don't know if anybody else has read that, but it was a real pivotal book. And in fact, my mother had a pivotal book in her life too. It was Feminine Mystique. So she claims that changed her life. Probably had something to do with a divorce, I'm guessing. So I started in 1996, a company called Birthlink. And at the same time, actually right around that same time, I realized I was going well into my own menopausal journey, which was, very interesting to me. Especially when I looked back on it, how much change went on in my life during this time, and it makes just perfect sense because it's all about change, basically reinventing yourself as a person chemically to become someone completely different. Luckily, it happens gradually, but it was still fairly challenging for me. And again, my practice, I think really, I kept coming back to my practice. When I felt like things were spinning out of control, I would just always feel like my practice was holding me rooted and grounded and giving me faith that I could do whatever it was I set out to do. So I started Birthlink, which was essentially an experiment. People kept coming to me, especially women, and asking me about birth things. And how do you find this? How do you know about that? What do you do with this? How do you do that? And I, at the time, had a marketing consulting firm. And I had a database and a computer. And I thought, well, okay, I'll just, there just needs to be some easy way to find this information. And there doesn't seem to be. A lot of these services that people were looking for, midwives, labor support companions, lactation support, they were not readily easily available. And this really was before the internet, okay, pre-internet. And so I put an ad in Chicago Parent Magazine, which is a little tabloid kind of magazine that actually still exists. And I had a lot of people starting to call me, and they'd say, well, they're practitioners, I said I was going to start some kind of network or something. They said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know, but give me your name and address and phone number, and we'll see what happens. So then parents started calling me because my phone number was in this magazine. And it grew. And pretty soon it grew to, over 16 years, a 200-member-based organization that supports and promotes the midwifery model of care and undisturbed birth, breastfeeding, and bonding as the best ways to bring babies into the world. And I also now work with parents individually and help to educate them if they want to come to me to decide what their options might be, how that works. Because as a consumer, it's very difficult to discern what the real choices are. Midwives, of course, have a lot of mystique. and a lot of, you know, misinformation swirls around them. And many people have the notion that midwives are old-fashioned, out of, you know, we don't need those kind of people anymore, or do they exist, or really? We have midwives in the state of Illinois, actually, that practice in hospital. We have them also that practice out of hospital, and we do have another option of alternative birth center, which is essentially a couple of rooms inside the regular labor and delivery ward. We don't have freestanding birth centers here because the state of Illinois and the powers that be decided to have a law against them, the only state in the country actually that had a law. It was repealed thanks to a couple of really hardworking midwives who also set up the alternative birth center after 25 years, and right now it's in the process of going through rules and regs and trying to come up with, well, we're going to have a birth center, so what does that look like? How does that work? Who's going to license and regulate, and what are the rules and regulations around that? The difficult thing in Illinois is that we have a very staunch medical community, and so the home birth option is fraught with a lot of problems. People, first of all, midwives are afraid to practice here because they've been persecuted a lot. And in fact, there was an arrest last month in Indiana because Indiana has a similar vague kind of law. There's really no law against home birth, but certified nurse midwives are legal under their nursing license, and certified professional midwives, which are certified nationally but not recognized by the state of Illinois, they're starting to practice a little bit. They still are practicing underground because they don't want to risk having people bash their door down and come in their house and search and do other things to them. So they're a little bit, you know, underground. 27 other states have licensed and regulated these midwives, so it's probably going to be a matter of time, but I don't know how long. And then there's the midwives who are not certified, either certified nurses or certified professional midwives. They're just considered direct entry midwives, and they practice without any minimum standards at all. So you can imagine that that might be a little dicey. And it also, you know, I think some of the licensing serves to weed out some of the type of people that you wouldn't necessarily want to have practicing midwifery, just for, you know, mental, emotional kind of issues. And, there are some of those actually practicing. I have personal experience with that. So along the same time period, 1998, I started my shiatsu training, which I am an Asian medicine practitioner in private practice and have been since pretty much the middle of my training, which was 99. Oddly started a private practice before I finished my complete training. And I also resisted being a shiatsu practitioner. I discovered it in my own backyard in Evanston. There's a school there, still there. And I thought, oh, that looks really interesting. I'm really curious about everything. And I called them up and said, who are you and what are you doing? And they said, oh, interesting. We're having our quarterly free introductory workshop. Why don't you come over? And I was like, free workshop? Yes. Okay. So I went, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I astounded myself by signing up for the first class and thought, well, okay, this will be nice for you know, family, friends, whatever. Interestingly, I guess the universe had other ideas, because I actually did, in spite of, you know, trying to drag my feet and resist, finish the entire program and get a certification. and taking the maximum amount of time, actually, 4 years. I now believe it's one of my greatest gifts, and I'm really grateful that I found it and I was able to, you know, that I'm still able actually to participate in that. It's just an amazing, amazing type of experience. Asian medicine is something I have a definite affinity for, and it fits beautifully with the birth work because, you know, I believe that nature has a plan, and for women to give birth without medications or unnecessary interventions, you have to really embrace and believe in the power of the birth process and the baby and the woman's body. And it saddens me greatly that women today don't have that belief. Most women actually get have medication in some of our hospitals, popular hospitals. There is a 90% epidural rate, which is basically narcotics injected into the central nervous system through the back, and is not without risks. There are many, many labors that are started artificially, and that's called induction. There are, you know, the thing that is actually most alarming probably is the infant mortality rates and the mother mortality rates now because mm-hmm. of the level of interventions that we see at the hospitals. We are something like 50th on the list for infant mortality. So that means 49 more other countries have better infant mortality rates than we do, in spite of the fact that we spend so much money on childbirth. It's kind of alarming. And I've seen it dropping. I've seen our position dropping. All you have to do is Google infant mortality and you can see it. It's quite astounding, actually, when you think about it. Mother mortality is a little harder to track because baby or mothers, you know, may die after they give birth, and they don't usually count it unless it's right during the birth. C-sections are the most common surgery in America today. Mm. Second most common surgery is hysterectomy. Mm. And third is gallbladder, I think, interestingly. So my, you know, belief obviously is that a woman is made to give birth. Her body, it knows what to do, has an inherent wisdom. And most of the time it works out well, actually, if left alone and, you know, having a midwife there that would, you know, monitor the process and encourage the woman and support the woman. Then most of the time things work out well. The belief, the cultural belief that birth is scary, dangerous, is perpetrated by the media and also by the medical community. And not necessarily, you know, with malintent or, the idea to do harm purposefully, but believing that birth is pathology and that it needs to be managed goes completely against my belief system. My belief system is I don't want anyone managing me, especially during childbirth. And the other sad piece of that is that birth being a hormonal process, the hormones of love, which actually create the baby and help get the baby out, and then the woman gets to experience after having the baby, are blocked usually by medications, and so she doesn't get to experience that. And then there, yes, you can bond still, but it isn't as amazing, significant, and euphoric experience that it could be. And so I believe that has a potential impact on your ability to parent. So love being the bond that helps us, you know, stay with the child for 20 to 25 years, which is a huge commitment. And those of you who are parents know this. how challenging it can be to raise a child in a, you know, conscious and loving manner. And so also, of course, you know, encouraging breastfeeding, that we are dismal on that too. It's 15% make it to 6 months. The World Health Organization would like to see women breastfeeding for a year or two. And even the American Academy of Pediatrics came out and said, they said 6 months to a year. So we don't live in a culture that supports these kinds of notions or these ideas. And so my job is very challenging. But the encouraging piece is that, along with the interest in alternative health and you know, people taking more of an active role in making sure that they stay well and adopt practices that are healthy in terms of their lifestyle, then they become more interested in the possibility of having a natural childbirth. That if they can find practitioners that support that and places that support that, then they are have a very good chance of achieving that. If they think they're going to have a natural childbirth by working with an OB or going to a regular hospital, slim chance there. Many women, unfortunately, are disappointed when that doesn't go the way they want it to, and then they have their first C-section, and the chance of getting a natural birth after that is difficult. Possible, but a lot requires a lot more effort. And actually really giving birth by C-section is, you know, absolutely at some times life-saving and a good and wonderful thing. The fact that we have a one-third of all women having C-sections now in this country just indicates to me that there's something wrong with our system. And of course, there are a number of things that contribute to this besides the medical model training and belief, but it's the you know, lawsuits and you know, the need to practice defensive medicine, which is actually infecting all of our health care. You know, the need to make money, profit, the profit motive, and over-dependence on technology. And not the least, but the last is the woman's, you know, wanting to, desire to try to avoid the pain of childbirth, which is totally manageable under the right circumstances. So, all this time, I was launching my son, and I actually raised him for the most part myself. And I graduated from my shiatsu program. I started practicing Qigong in 2008. And I actually also was a yoga practitioner since the 70s. That's kind of had to kind of... I still do a little, but I do more Qigong, and they're not very compatible, interestingly. And so I was always looking for a spiritual home, and went to, you know, several different meditation groups, or went to a lot of retreats and tried different places. And when I came to Ancient Dragon, it was also that same feeling of, I finally found my home. So I'm really happy to be here. And I hope that I'm going to be able to continue to do the work that I do, because it brings me great and wonderful satisfaction. And I'm actually in the process of, actually it's kind of a birthing process of writing a book about home birth. And so it's taking on a huge project, and I'm excited about it and also kind of terrified at the same time. And so, you know, I actually did want to tie everything together for people who are here tonight, because, you know, you're not necessarily going to all be having babies, but you might know somebody who is, and you might be in a position of influence just to mention that, you know, have you thought about something else, or have you have you heard of? Or, you know, sometimes we can have great influence over people and we don't even realize it. We aren't even aware of it. And it can be very beneficial to them. From our own perspective, you know, the chances of us having some kind of a medical adventure during our lifetime are probably pretty high. So I have this model called the risk versus benefit model, where if you're ever faced with something medical, then you can kind of go through this process that will help you make decisions about that. And it's something you can, you know, take with you and read on your own. But on the back of that, I have a poem which I wanted to share with you to finish. And it kind of speaks to me. Hopefully it'll speak to you as well. If you follow your heart, by Tara Cox, may you dream with all your heart, and may you have the heart to see that the best thing you can ever do is to be who and where you want to be. So if you're ever at a crossroads or facing a hard-headed wall, or you seem to be going in circles or going nowhere at all, just stop yourself and remember what deep down inside you know. If you just follow your heart, your feet will know where to go. Pass that. Questions? Do we have time for any questions?
Yes, we do, and thank you so much. Very informative and important. So, comments, questions, responses for Joanne, please feel free. Yes, Brooks.
I just want to say thank you. It seems like an incredible work, because over the last couple of years, I've kind of specialized in yoga for the pelvic floor, and I'm actually a couple of weeks going to go and help my teacher teach a teacher training about it, and I'm just excited. But some of these stats, you know, I hear in different places, and some of the things that you mentioned about the C-section, then hysterectomy, you know, so I know some of the stuff behind some of the stuff, you know, and I mean, it's just mind-blowing, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately what happens to a lot of women who choose to do medicated birth is that they can't function because their hormones are blocked, so the doctors then have to employ really drastic measures to get the baby out, which would be not the least a episiotomy, or which is, you know, cutting the vagina so that you can get the baby out. So I don't advise that unless absolutely necessary. It's just, and it's something that's been routine in the past, really terrible thing. Vacuum and forceps deliveries, as you might imagine, wreak havoc on the pelvic floor of the woman, not to mention what they do to the baby. So, you know, once again, these things can be life-saving when used when everything else has been employed, but they're used way too routinely because they can be used. You know, so it's a good point. Yes, Don.
Yeah. So I found with my experience with Anne Marie, well, Basil also, like, I went natural. Which was so natural. Pretty much through a lot of it, but in order to do that, like, to even say stuff, like, when people would ask about different things, like, oh my god, like, people would just, were really not very nice about it, kind of, like, be, well, you could kill your baby, or, like, I mean, it was really terrible things, it was really awful, and so, like, I really found, like, we really had to, well, I mean, they said that we had really educated ourselves anyhow. Like, we really had to, like, keep that and be able to be, you know, we had to be able to educate them as well. Because, you know, these people were, I mean, it really sucked. And especially as I got later on, I don't know, because it was, like, really sad. And then nursing at a later age, oh, that was fun. But, you know, all the stairs for that, too, you know, it's just, and that was hard, and you know, getting asked to not be able to feed your own child in a restaurant, especially she was even just like a couple of couple months old.
That still happens.
You know, and yeah.
We've had to enact laws, basically, that allow women to breastfeed in public places.
Right, and most states will make, you know, that's illegal, but then you can, a lawsuit, but it's so, like, traumatizing. It's because it sucks, you know, like, and, oh my God. So, but it brings it all back that that's still going on, like being able to, you know, I just assumed that it would be easier to have a child at home now, you know, 9 years later, 10 years later, that that would be an easier thing. Does that, you know?
Yes and no. I mean, there's always been around 10 practitioners or so, you know, I would say that it's home birth is like more known, more heard of, and it's a little more accepted in terms of transfers. I mean, nobody likes to see a transfer coming into the hospital because they know it's going to be problems. You know, I don't envy them being in that situation either, but you know, the vast majority of those transfers are just because the mother's too scared to have the baby and so she needs some assistance. It's not an emergency at all. When it's a true emergency, the question is, well, is it better to be at the hospital or not? Who can answer that question? I don't know. No one that I know of. Really.
Well, I didn't actually at the hospital. My most definitely.
But you had to.
Never do that again. I would definitely do it at home.
You had to fight every step of the way,
yeah,
basically.
You have to put a sign up, you know, like, do not put an IV in me beforehand. Like, don't give me that. Like, you have to sign all the stuff, you know, to make sure that nobody, if Basil were to walk out of the room and I'm not in, you know, the best frame, like, they're not going to stick something in my arm, you know. So, but I had good support, so it was a good situation. But it is, it's
labor's hard enough without having to kind of foist off the, you know, the practitioners that are used to doing things because that's the way they do them. And oh, efficiency is another reason. You know, they see a lot of people, so they want to kind of get things going and get it done. And they have rules too, protocols that say you have to get 1 centimeter per hour or they're going to have to start doing things to you, you know. I mean,
becomes an assembly line, it sounds like.
Kind of. Yes, Ben.
One of my sisters is an OBGYN, and actually was also an anthropologist who studied alternative birthing.
Oh, she my.
Was an undergraduate. And I had a conversation with her once about induction and C-section, and her perspective is that a lot of why she ends up doing it is because of fear of lawsuits. Mm. Fear of lawsuits, and also that there are protocols in the hospitals that she's worked at that sort of structure it so that it's very hard for her to allow labor to progress longer than the protocol says that it should. And also fear of allowing labor to go on too long and that something might happen to the baby and that that she might be sued. OBGYNs have some of the highest insurance rates of any medical practitioners, period.
Yeah, it's a broken system.
Yeah.
Very much a broken system. That I wouldn't want to be in their shoes either. It's not fun being sued, I'm sure. And yet, you know, what are you going to do? It's nobody's happy in that scenario. Doctors aren't happy. The parents aren't happy. You know, it's just really unfortunate. And yes, they do get sued more than any other doctor, I think. Isn't that right, Mike? You know?
Because the settlements are so high, so there's a huge economic incentive for plaintiff's lawyers to file those suits.
Yeah.
And so then the insurance that they have to pay is very high, and so then a lot of...
That cost has to be passed on.
...to be OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the family practitioners who were doing one-on-one birthing with families had to get out of the business because they couldn't afford to do it anymore, which is really sad because they were providing wonderful, more like midwifery care, you know. But yeah, it's it. Our system is just really some need of big changes. I don't know how that's going to happen, but.
Well, in terms of that, I was you know, there's so many ways in which our medical, our healthcare system is broken, and it's broken. You know, many of our systems in the society are broken. But you know, one of the things that's going on now, and I wondered your perspective about this, and I've talked about it here before, that it seems like there's something of a war on women going on in terms of women's health and in terms of, you know, abolishing, well, not just abortion, but abolishing contraception and these, you know, all these intrusive programs that are being sponsored. And, you know, anyway, I wonder how that affects you and what you do and whatever perspective you have on all of that.
Well, for some reason, women's reproduction has always been a political arena. No matter what it is, I don't know exactly why, but midwifery, you know, of course, the Inquisition, most of those people were midwives that got burned. I mean, that was unbelievable. It started way back then, you know.
1600s.
Witches, because they knew things that we don't understand, you know. I think fear, really, just fear of the you know, what we consider the blood mysteries, you know, of reproduction. Just it's something we can't control. We don't have control over these things, and they're natural, you know, physiological functions of the body, and we still have shame and fear and a lack of understanding or appreciation for them, without which we would not be here, hello, you know. when medical schools started, they started stomping out the midwives, and I just see it as an economic thing, you know, competition, don't want any competition. So that's been going on forever. Of course, midwifery still survived and still going today in spite of best efforts. I think women are always going to want that kind of care, and they're going to find it somehow, and women are going to provide it. I mean, and women weren't necessarily trained to be midwives. They just became midwives and apprenticed and learned. And actually, surgeons have to apprentice as well, which I thought was kind of interesting. So to discard or disregard apprenticing as a valid way of learning, I mean, plumbers apprentice, electricians apprentice, to say that midwifery apprenticing is not a valid form of training just doesn't float, just doesn't, you know, doesn't fly. So
it seems to me that part of all of this, which to me connects with our practice in a very deep way, is, you know, you talk about natural childbirth, and our society is so geared towards, you know, as you said, control and rationalizing everything. And part of what we do, you know, in our meditation and in our way of practice and studying these practices, is to see that nature allow, you know, we are part of nature. You know, nature isn't something that we should control and manage. We are expressions of the natural order. And so, you know, I think part of the, you know, as you said, the repression of women's sexuality and childbirth and all of that is trying to control that which is natural. And part of what our meditation teaches us is to open up to what is, you know, natural. How do we find our own way to live in a wholesome way? Of course, there's lots of value and benefit to science. It's not, we should get rid of that. But how do we see the undercurrent of what is natural in our own way of being as well? So,
yeah, honoring, yes.
I'm also curious, is there a midwife association?
Yes, many of them.
Because, I mean, if that thing coalesced at a national level, it seems like, or maybe it has, I don't know, but there's a lot of areas in healthcare that just the sheer economic, I mean, I'm listening to the minimal approach here sounds like it's much less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You think the insurance companies would be behind you?
You might think that, but I don't know what their thing is. So, you know, a couple of bright spots. In Washington, there's an initiative to double the number of home births in that state. And Oregon and Washington are some of the best actual birth states. And they have had, you know, licensing for non-nurse midwives for a long time. And they realize that, look, you know, anybody who has, sensibility sees that half of the people are on public aid and so, or public insurance. So the government is paying for half the births. So, you know, if people had a birth center or home births, the cost is like three to four for home birth. It's $3,500 to $4,000. The average birth in a hospital is $10,000. If you $5,000 to $10,000. If you get a C-section, it could be up to $20,000 or more. And if your baby goes to the NICU, it's $1,000 a day. So we're talking big money here. Mm-hmm. You know,